The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, I'm joined in studio by the author of a new book. It's called The Heart Book. It's subtitled Making Positive Changes for a Healthy and Happier Life. My guest is Professor Robert Kelly, consultant cardiologist, lifestyle medicine physician and health habits coach based in the Beacon Hospital. There's a mouthful. Robert, thank you very much for joining us in studio.
Thank you, Pat.
Now, you are a cardiologist, so your primary medical interest was the heart and the functioning of this vital organ that we have. Where did that interest come from?
So I trained in cardiology from the late 1990s. I trained in Ireland. I ended up working in the UK and then I went to America. And in America, I learned all about treating blockages in people's arteries with stents and treating heart attacks.
The mechanics of it.
Now, when I was in medical school, sadly, my younger brother died from sudden cardiac death. He was the year behind me in medical school. And when I came to write the book, I kind of discovered in hindsight that a huge reason why I ended up doing cardiology had a lot to do with that.
Okay, because you were a regular medical student at the time of his death.
Absolutely.
And then you specialized in cardiology, subliminally influenced by the passing of your brother.
Absolutely.
Now, this is more than about the mechanics of the heart. This is a very holistic book.
So the evolution of my cardiology practice, so I've been in the Beacon for almost 20 years. And so as I've started with stents and doing a lot of the mechanical intervention, patients would come back, symptoms would still be there. Patients will come back wanting either more tablets because they don't feel better, and then they want less tablets because they don't want to take them. And then ultimately they don't deal with the root cause of what the problem is. So, you know, it led me to believe that what we were doing was not complete for patients, and that evolved my whole interest in a different perspective, more holistic based, which included a whole new area of medicine called lifestyle medicine.
Now, can lifestyle alone reverse the impact of cardiovascular disease?
So lifestyle medicine is an evidence-based area of medicine. Its premise is that it prevents, it treats, and it potentially reverses certain chronic diseases that cause heart disease. So if you change your diet, you can reverse diabetes. You can lose weight. If you take more exercise, you can have a huge impact on your heart health. In fact, you can cut the risk almost by 50 or 60%. If you manage your stress, if you manage your sleep, you can again cut the risks by 30 or 40%. And so there are other measures where you can improve blood pressure by a change in diet. You can improve an awful lot of your health, in truth, from stopping smoking, from changing your alcohol intake, from not taking drugs.
So if you are dealing with someone who has evidence of cardiovascular disease and then you recommend these lifestyle changes, a big chunk of the book is about resistance to change, why people find it so difficult to change.
So a lot of my learning over the years has been if you go on a diet, good example of this, unfortunately, in most people's cases, the weight comes back again. So you have this idea that you do the same thing again and again, looking for a different outcome, and that's just not what happens. One of the great timings of the book is everybody's going to set a New Year's resolution for themselves next month. And we'll all have great intentions. And sadly, by about the 21st of January, 90% of people will have broken all those New Year's resolutions. So I started to identify why is it that patients find it so difficult to actually make the change. Some of it's about understanding about the significance of lifestyle. But then ultimately, I had to find a different approach to the traditional diets and New Year's resolutions to try and make the change. And I discovered a number of different ways, largely influenced by personal development influences of Jack Canfield, Bob Proctor. And then I came across a small, tiny steps approach by a guy called BJ Fogg, which actually turned out to be a very, very easy and a very effective way to help people change behavior.
So when you say the tiny steps approach, how do you mean? Because if you're going to stop smoking, going from 20 to 19 to 18 to 15 to 16, whatever, fags a day, does that actually work?
So that works really effectively. So BJ Fogg has a model, which is that if you make life as easy as you possibly can. So that's a good example. You stop one cigarette less. So say you're on 20, you go to 19 tomorrow, 18, 17, and so on and so on.
So the trick is to buy a pack of 20 if you're a 20 a day man. And you smoke the 20 on day one, you buy a new pack, take one fag out and destroy it. Get rid of it.
No, the idea is that you take 20 today, 19 tomorrow,
that's
18 the next.
But,
so just try and
In order to force yourself to do that, take the cigarette out that you're not going to smoke and get rid of it.
You can do it that way. So I do this with patients. And what I actually get patients to do is a lot of patients at about 5 cigarettes a day struggle. So at that stage, I suggest they bring in things like nicotine gums and nicotine inhalers, not the vape, as a way to just help them get to the point of zero. And I've been very effective at doing that.
Now, the other lifestyle changes, things like you say that closeness to family, for example, is a very good indicator of a longer life. How?
So there's a fantastic paper. It's published at this time last year. It's in a group of research in the UK Biobank study, which looks at the risk of being on your own or being isolated. It's very context-based around COVID. But it's also replicated in the American Heart study, showing that people who are on their own, isolated, have a 30% higher mortality rate compared to people in the opposite circumstance. And the big factor is your social connection to your family. And in fact, it's much more than your social connection to your friends or if you're in other groups of society like the men's shed or otherwise. So it's really, really important, particularly around the time of the year we're coming into, to spend more time engaging with your family. And the critical number of times is 3 times per week. Now, the simple step, like the smoking example, might be you ring your mother every day. Or you actually arrange to meet your brother or your sister, or you reach out to your uncle and your aunt. But the protection around social connection is enormous in terms of extending your length of life and reducing your risk of things like heart disease.
Now, you talk about evidence-based medicine, lifestyle medicine. What is the evidence then that doing those kind of things actually enhances your life and extends your life?
So the evidence in my field of cardiology is overwhelming. So if you exercise every day for approximately 30 minutes at a moderate pace, you can cut your risk of heart disease by almost 70%. You can also live an awful lot longer. If you deal with the aspects around stress, social isolation, you cut the risk by a third. If you take a healthy diet, you cut the risk by almost 60%. If you stop smoking, it's about 50%. And so if you reduce things like your cholesterol, get rid of diabetes, it's the same.
Now, we talked about, you know, obviously, if you take more exercise, if you give up smoking, that's positive. But suppose you're already afflicted with cardiovascular disease. I mentioned earlier, can some of these things be absolutely reversed?
So there is good evidence that you can reverse an element of heart disease. You can improve it by taking a certain amount of medication, but also if you need to change your lifestyle. So you cannot take the cholesterol medicine and think that you can stay on the same diet that started the problem in the first place. It doesn't work that way. And so the reality is that you can improve your heart health by all of the lifestyle measures. You have to do them all. Now, you're not going to do them all at the same time. You're going to start with the one that you find the easiest. So if you like walking...
Not the one that might be most dangerous.
No,
in other words, if you're a smoker, you know you should give up smoking. But you start instead with the exercise because you find that more enjoyable.
Well, I think you have to get into something that's key. It has to be enjoyable. You get used to doing things for your health. You make that your priority. You take the steps. Then you do the smoking. Then you might add other factors. I mean, obviously, when you stop smoking, you try to eat more. But then you try to make choices that you eat things that are better for you as opposed to things that are not so good for you.
At the end of the book, in Appendix 1, you have a 7-minute health check. And it's a series of questions. How healthy are you? Do you look after your physical well-being? Do you smoke? Do you take recreational drugs? Do you drink more than 12 small glasses of alcohol per week? Do you sleep at least 7 to 8 hours uninterrupted every night? Do you take some form of physical activity, a brisk walk, at least 30 minutes a day or 150 minutes per week? You're giving us 2 days off.
Well, the recommendation is actually you can even shorten it more than that. So with exercise, you could do 75 minutes of exercise vigorously twice a week.
So and that has the same effect as...
Has the same effect. So vigorous is where you're just about able to sing to the person beside you. That's vigorous. Moderate is where you're just about able to talk to the person beside you. So the moderate reference is 150 minutes a week. So that's 30 minutes every day. The 150 can be made up as 2 75s of vigorous activity.
Yeah, the thing about marathon runners, for instance, or distance runners, they, when they do a long run, they're able to chat completely freely with the person next to them. So,
but the challenge with marathon runners and people who exercise a lot is they think that they're immune from heart disease. Mm. So it's not and it's not the running alone that protects the risk. So if you have a bad diet or other habits or you're very stressed out in life, we all know people who do long distance running and other lot of exercise who unfortunately also expose themselves to risks for heart disease.
Now, you know that expression, you can't fight City Hall. And City Hall in this case is your DNA, your genetics. I mean, how strong is genetics in terms of how long you're going to live?
So this is a really, really important point. Your risk of any illness when it comes to your heart is only 20% related to your family history or your genes. Now, if you have a genetic risk of heart disease, you should go and see a doctor and get checked out. Don't wait for something to happen. Don't assume that you're the healthy member of the family. It'll never happen to you. But 80% of the risk is influenced by your lifestyle. Your lifestyle will influence your genetic risk. So it's really important to take on all the other measures that we just spoke about.
Now, if I was to follow your recommendations in terms of my core values, it's a huge list. Abundance, acceptance, achievement. I won't do all the A's and I won't do all the B's and C's. I'll just read out a few of them. Balance, beauty, benevolence, frugality, fun, generosity, grace, growth, happiness. And there's another page or two of these core values. Mastery, mindfulness, meticulousness, open-mindedness, tidiness, trust, unity, unflappability, valour, vivaciousness. My goodness.
So this is very well established. There's even more, Pat, if you go looking for them.
Well, I can do, I mean, there's two pages.
The book, beyond the book.
Yeah. So what's the idea of that?
So I think if you value your health, which is an important value, you will take care of yourself. I think the challenge in life is to help people understand that. I think the other point about value is that if you value certain things in your life, they will influence the steps that you take. And so if you value that you want to value family, as an example, and you value community, well, that might be a very useful way to help you design ways to improve your health.
Now, I remember the late Austin Dara, Professor Austin Dara, and he was an endocrinologist by profession, but he liked to describe himself as a physician. In other words, he had a holistic view of the human condition. And there are few enough of those kind of people around. You know, if you've got a problem in your knee and you've a problem in your ankle, caused maybe by the same athletic activity, you'll be sent to a knee man first, and then the knee man will send you to an ankle man, and you could be going to an elbow man and a spinal man. And it's, you know, it's hard to get the treatment you require in one place.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I come from a generation, my parents are both surgeons. So I have grown up in the generation, trained in the generation where people like Professor Dara were role models in terms of general physicians. It has evolved to complete specialization. I mean, I think in the orthopedic example, there'll probably be a doctor in the future for one bone in the toe. There'll be another one for the next bone in the toe. I could easily see that happening.
Now, I understand the logic in this, that if you're a brain surgeon and you're doing 10 brains a day, you're going to be a pretty good brain surgeon by the time you get to your 1,000th operation. If, however, you're only doing one brain operation a year and then tomorrow you're doing an elbow operation, you're not going to be good at either of them.
Absolutely. But my perspective on this is, while I do stents for patients, I think it's really important that patients have the whole aspect of their heart looked after. Ironically, the chronic diseases are not just heart disease. They include cancer. They include lung disease. They include Alzheimer's disease. So looking after your health is a key component, no matter what specialist you end up seeing for whatever ailment or illness you have.
But that whole question of specialization, do you think it's inevitable that that's the way it has to be? Or is there still a case for the generalist?
I still firmly believe there's a case for the generalist. You have an older population who have a lot of medical problems. We end up seeing multiple specialists to deal with patients. There's a lot of process. There's a lot of organization. And ultimately, somebody has to make a decision rather than take a lot of opinions. So it really comes back to somebody acting a little bit like the quarterback in organizing all the different facets of what's wrong with the patient.
The book, which is just out, is called The Heart Book, Making Positive Changes for a Healthy and Happier Life. And you do predict that anyone who goes by this particular Bible will end up living longer, but you'll never be sued by someone who doesn't. They won't be there. They won't be around.
But Pat, I have lots of patients who've even reached 100 years of age. And I have a very interesting patient story just to share. I have a 96-year-old patient who sees me every Christmas. So 2 years ago at 95, he came in to tell me he'd walked 500 kilometers of that year. And he said to me, "Dr. Kelly, next year I'm going to do 600. I will be into you the week before Christmas just to show you that I'm actually doing that."
Okay, so his ambition is undimmed.
His ambition is undimmed. He completely wants to keep going, and exercise is his thing. And the exercise he actually does is he walks around the garden 20 times twice a day, and he measures the distance because he's afraid to walk on the main roads so that he might fall over and hurt himself.
It reminds me of COVID. Being cocooned in COVID. Anyway, the book is terrific, absolutely terrific. It's inspiring. Called The Heart Book, Making Positive Changes for a Healthy and Happier Life. It's published by Orphan Press, and its author, Professor Robert Kelly, who's a cardiologist and lifestyle medicine expert at the Beacon Hospital. Thank you very much for joining us in studio today. Before you go, just a couple of comments. Good to hear a doctor talk about how we can manage our health with good practice rather than drugs or surgery. Well done. Enjoying the show. I'm 61 and recently had a CT coronary angiogram. I got it done voluntarily. I'm a non-smoker. Results showed I had a moderate amount of buildup in my arteries. I'm put on a statin. What do you think of statins is the question.
So in the context of plaque in the cardiac CT, the statin is indicated. In the absence of plaque, which is hopefully for most people who get their heart checked out, it's not indicated as the first line. The first line is your diet. And then if you need a statin because you can't improve your cholesterol, then it's indicated. For the person taking the statin, you still have to change your diet.
Okay. And someone picking me up, I was mentioning the knee man and the heart man. Obviously, there are knee women and elbow women and big toe women as well. So
there are a lot of excellent women specialist doctors in this country.
All right, Robert, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.